Next up is the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association, Ben Martins.
Thank you all for taking the time to meet with us and join everybody. So my name is Ben Martins. I'm the executive director of the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association, and we are a nonprofit, fisheries-based nonprofit, and we identify and foster ways to restore the fisheries of the Gulf of Maine and restore Maine's fishing communities for future generations. And we work directly with fishermen on policies and community advocacy projects. And we support stewardship, science-based decision-making, equitable access to our ocean's natural resources, and policies that support diverse fishing businesses in Maine and beyond. And our fisheries policy work is mostly focused on the other fisheries of Maine. We don't really work with the lobster fishery on policy initiatives. We work with them on different projects within their community, but we focus on the groundfish fishery, the federal scallop fishery, monkfish, halibut, herring, tuna, the things that are outside the 3-mile limit that many fishermen historically in Maine used as part of their yearly round, but have been on the decline, both in terms of access and the natural resources for many years. So we work in those other fisheries, and we organize fishermen to bring their voice into the policy arena. So we worked recently with a bunch of fishermen that target scallops in the federal fisheries. That's called the Northern Gulf of Maine Scallop Fishery. And we were going to lose access to that fishery to larger boats from New Bedford that were coming into the Gulf of Maine. So we organized fishermen. We protected that access through the New England Fishery Management Council. Last year, with climate change, warming waters, we had an abundance of scallops in our federal waters. We landed almost 600,000 pounds of scallops out of that fishery at a time of year when many of the fishermen who are groundfish fishermen or lobster fishermen were able to buy permits or use their permits that they had to participate in scallops. So it's those types of opportunities that we try and invest in, work with the Department of Marine Resources and local fishermen to identify opportunities in these other diverse fisheries, and then help fishermen embrace and build their businesses around those different opportunities. So one of the things that we bring as a asset is that we play in those other fisheries, so we know how permits work. Federal fisheries permits operate very differently than the state permits that you may be more familiar with. You can buy and trade permits in the federal marketplace. So a scallop permit for the Northern Gulf of Maine, right now that costs $150,000. That is a significant investment for somebody to make. So we are able to sit down with them and talk about the risks, the markets, think about what that does to the other permits that you might have. If you have a scallop permit and a lobster permit, there's different sets of reporting that you have to do. And so when fishermen are thinking about taking their business and moving it forward, adding diversity of catch to their business platform, their boat, their permit makeup, that's a 360-degree view of understanding markets, permits, regulations, and that's what we can sit down and provide with them. So we worked with a lot of fishermen over the past 3 or 4 years to buy scallop permits, to buy groundfish permits. Despite the groundfish fishery being on the decline in Maine over the past 20 years, we've had more fishermen in the lobster fishery reach out to us to purchase groundfish permits for the past 2 years than in my previous 10 years of working in this space. And that's because we're seeing fish in the ocean, and fishermen are worried about what their future might look like with the lobster fishery and other issues that are coming. And so they want to stay on the water. They want to continue to fish. They want to look at that diversity of options. So we operate the Maine Coast community sector in the groundfish fishery. Those are fish like cod, haddock, flounder. That is managed in a very strange way, but it's basically they allocate out pounds of fish. So it's a cap and trade system. You have to be part of a sector to operate within that system. We operate that sector in Maine. We've also partnered with the Nature Conservancy to go out and buy permits to park in that sector so that fishermen can get access to that cap and trade quota and build out their businesses. We bought about 28 permits with the Nature Conservancy, and we lease those pounds of fish annually to active fishermen at a reduced rate, prioritizing folks that are doing things in the research arena, or if they are fishing using sustainable fishing methods as well. So that's a way that we've invested in the business security of a subset of the fleet in the groundfish fishery. The other piece of that, just to flag, is that we don't have a lot of infrastructure left for the groundfish fishery. It's in Portland, in the Portland Fish Exchange. And so our organization is very closely tied to the success of that entity. And I would encourage you all, as you're thinking about the infrastructure needs and the marine resources, that that entity is going through some transitional changes right now. And a field trip down to the Portland Fish Exchange would be a fantastic opportunity to learn a little bit about groundfish, see what happens down there, talk to some of the fishermen, and it's not too far away. And so I would heavily encourage that. Pivoting to a couple of the projects that we work with closer to home. So that's our policy work in the federal waters. We also recognize that you need access. So it doesn't matter how many fish are in the ocean. If you can't get to them, they're not going to do a lot of good for those of us in our rural communities in Maine. And so we have community work that's focused on access. So both permits and working waterfront, seafood, trying to make sure that there's a market for those products to be sold into, and then wellness. So I'm going to quickly hit on our working waterfront work, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about our program called the Fisherman Feeding Mainers program as well. But working waterfront is a hot topic in Maine right now, as we have shifting communities, as we have gentrification taking place in a lot of places. And unfortunately, we don't actually know that much about our working waterfront in Maine. It is up to the municipalities to kind of regulate their own working waterfronts. We have one program, the Land for Maine's Future program, that invests in working waterfront protection. So the Department of Marine Resources administers, and they've been doing some great work. Not all the working waterfronts that's important in Maine fits well into that program. And a lot of the municipalities that we work with, they don't know what they have. They don't know what's privately owned. They don't know what's publicly owned. They don't know what might be at risk for conversion, both to a marina or to a condo, a hotel, a high-end a housing apartment. So there's a lot of uncertainty in our working waterfront infrastructure. And if you're thinking about a state like Maine, where access to the oceans is a priority and really one of the core competencies, whether it's access for fishing or aquaculture businesses, we need to protect our working waterfront and we need to invest in our working waterfront. So one of the projects that we've done is we've recognized two threats. One is conflict. So as new people are coming into our communities, they don't always know what it's like to live in a working waterfront. In the handouts that I passed around, we have a new publication that came from us that is called Scuttlebutt. And it's basically a how to live in a working waterfront community guide that we produced in partnership with the community of Harpswell. So anybody who moves to Harpswell gets handed one of these guides now. We've worked with all the real estate agents. We've worked with all the rentals, all the different businesses, the town hall. It's like, you need to understand there might be smells, there might be noises. There might be people that are working in, with lights on early in the morning. We started this project because there was complaints in the town office about a beeping from a working waterfront property at 5 a.m. It's like, that's the forklift. The beeping is like, that's required. You have to do that, but they didn't understand that. And so what tends to happen in these situations is conflict starts to brew. And instead of having better communication and understanding, that's when you start to get in a push me, pull me fight that never results well for anybody within a community. So mitigating conflict is one of our top priorities within communities. We're doing that through conversations, through publications, and education around our working waterfronts. And then the other piece is we are about to launch a working waterfront inventory project where we have gone out and we've developed a platform so that communities can go through and inventory their own working waterfront, either through volunteers or through partnerships. And basically it's like, these are where you go to learn about working waterfront. Here are the places you go to figure out what kind of permits you might have. So basically it's a step-by-step guide for a community or municipality to inventory their own working waterfront. We're going to be working with a handful of communities this summer to test out what we have produced. But that is a baseline that we need to start to establish and then track over time to know what is shifting, what is changing, and what is most at risk within working waterfronts. The final piece I'll just share about our work is going back to the groundfish fishery, is that during COVID, groundfish in Maine mostly ended up in restaurants. And prior to COVID, that's what we did. We sold it into high-end restaurants. When COVID struck, all those restaurants closed. And so we had fishermen that were literally going out, filling their boats with fish, coming back home, and it was being sold into the lobster bait market. And it was a huge loss. And at the same time, we were hearing about food insecurity in our state spiking. So we have an abundance of protein, no place to take it. So we went out and we built a program called Fishermen Feeding Mainers. We were incredibly lucky in that we were able to get some support from several foundations to kind of try it out. So we bought fish from fishermen at a stable price. We paid local processors in Portland to cut that fish. And then we donated into schools, local food insecure populations, any nonprofit that was working with food insecurity that needed access and wanted fish. We said, sure. We're paying for it. It's yours. We worked closely with Good Shepherd Food Bank, and it was really successful. It helped stabilize price for the fishermen, and the need within our communities was amazing. With that kind of trial balloon that we put out there, we were then able to work with the Department of Marine Resources and the governor's office in Maine to use COVID relief funds that were set aside for the fishing industry to go out and buy fish to do this, keep this project going. So, it started in October of 2020. As of last week, we had bought 587,000 pounds of groundfish in the state of Maine. And we had turned that into close to a million meals for those in need in our state. It's been incredibly impactful. And it's been a lot of a lot of work to get there, but a lot of support from our state. And it's been revealing for us to understand the intricacies and the connections in the local food system that don't really exist in our state. When we talk about feeding people good quality food, fish and seafood is not a part of that equation until we forced it in there by providing free meals. All of our schools, like we have over 50 schools that have received seafood donations from us, they could not afford that without this program. And we've been working with chefs and those within those schools to learn how to cook fish, understand fish. The first donation we made to a school was actually thrown away because they got fresh fish and they didn't use it within 2 days. And they were like, well, we got to get rid of this now. And they threw it away. And so we had to do a lot of education as well about like that fish was landed 2 days ago. You've got some time to play with it. So there's a lot of that type of work that went into this. And so I share that because it has been a fantastic project. There's been a lot of benefits and it's kept the boats fishing in Maine without a huge influx of cash. We've been able to do a lot of good in cities and communities like Portland and Harpswell and Port Clyde that have been really profoundly impacted by market fluctuations. So I will stop there and just open up if there's any questions about that piece of work or anything else. There's a lot of information about what we do. In the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association to support the other fisheries in our state. So, thank you.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Is it Martens?
Yeah, you got it.
Great. Fascinating. And thank you for the report about the, you know, feeding the insecure with the fish. I mean, we love it when we hear about two challenges being solved at once. That's just terrific. I'm also a real estate agent in Camden and in the area down there and have done that for 20 years. So I'm very familiar with the people who want to go see property in Port Clyde and get down there and just kind of look around and are like, oh, but look at the trucks or, you know, or I hear noise or, you know, so this is such a great publication, and it seems to me it is fair. You've got some information about Harpswell, and I understand that there were Harpswell nonprofits who helped you probably with the funding behind it. But otherwise, it's pretty generic. It'd be great to have something like this that was a total generic thing that could go to other coastal communities where we're also facing this, because the last thing anybody in real estate wants is to have unhappy customers whose expectations are totally different than what they buy into. And we want people who are going to move into communities with working waterfronts and support it, not fight against it. So is there grant money available where you could do that kind of thing?
Number two,
I'm also hoping that you'll report back to us about your findings on the loss, not the loss, but as you put it, a study on sort of the, what are waterfronts areas that are at risk.
Absolutely. So, we will definitely be reporting that once we start to collect a little bit more information and work with the municipalities. So I would say we are not overly interested in doing a generic publication, because we think all of these communities are pretty unique, special. And one of the things that we tried to do is make that into a document that people will hold on to. So in the back of that document, there are phone numbers and people to contact in the community of Harpswell, so that you get that, right? Okay. And you're like, I want to hold on to this, right?
Yeah.
And so we are actually trying to reach out to other communities to say, who wants to do this? We've got, like, as you said, there's a lot of there that's already generic that you can kind of take and pull in, plug and play. But we're hoping that a place like Camden, like St. George, other communities would say, you know, it's not going to take a lot of funds to make something like that happen. And so we're hopeful that we can start to build, use as a tool to engage communities in the conversation. We find it much more meaningful when you start a real conversation over it, as opposed to just handing somebody a tool, because typically that tool ends up on a shelf and doesn't get used. So if you've got folks in your community that might be interested in talking to us, we would absolutely love to. We're actually working on something with the Kennebunkport community right now on a different version of the publication, because we've heard pretty loud and clear from folks that we've shared it with that there's a value there. So
thank you. Yeah. I mean, St. George really is the community that comes to mind. So I'll talk to our good representative from St. George and
that's great.
Get her on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Landry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The permits, licenses, quite pricey. What's the lifespan of a license?
Yeah. So for a federal license, once you own it, it's yours.
And you can sell it.
Yeah.
And so gift it or whatever.
Yeah. You can sell it. You can gift it. Different fisheries have different values associated with those permits. And they can fluctuate dramatically depending upon what's available in the ocean. With, you know, a groundfish permit, it could cost from $10,000 to over $1 million, depending upon what the history is associated with it. So it can be a very significant investment for a small business to contemplate making.
And they're limited to certain areas?
Depending on the permit, they can be either limited to certain areas, certain sized vessels, certain types of fisheries. So there's a lot of complexities that go into it. The scallop permit that I was referring to is only available, like you can only catch the scallops north of 4220 in the Gulf of Maine for that permit.
Good. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Interesting.
On that note, we'll just keep moving right along. who do we have next? Maine Aquaculture Association, Sebastian Bell.